Welcome back, everyone, to our Groundskeeper Chat series. I am your host, Meg Krueger. I am the content lead with Pioneer Athletics. And today we are live from Daytona Beach. It's not too loud. I'm never too loud.
Meg, what if we started saying we're live from Palm Springs so we don't have to do this next year and we already have them ready to go?
Like, I love it because you know I'll be pregnant by then. So
I think what we need to do is go on the website and get all the future sites, and we need to do like B-roll radio promos.
Palm Springs.
Yeah.
We just Denver. Add them in.
Well, you don't want to accent the wrong syllable.
Well, there's a few voices that you've heard come through here. One of them being my co-host, Weston Appenfeller, our unofficial co-host, Christopher Bell, and then our esteemed guest, Mr. Ryan DeMay, who I will say is one of the most eloquent speakers.
Dressed today, too.
Looking so sharp. But truly, I had you on the podcast probably in 2021, 2022. Talking about, you know, justifying your bottom line. And I was like, oh, you know, we'll talk about budgets and, you know, timesheets and spreadsheets. And in the knowledge you dropped on me, I'm telling you, it sparked a whole different campaign. I was like, oh, I could talk to people about this for 17 years. Like, just helping justify
She's
your bottom line.
She's still talking about it. We have 15 years left.
Yeah. I mean, the clock is ticking.
So I'm sure we'll dive a little bit into that topic today, because that is the session that you have here at SFMA.
Yeah.
Ball Fields on a Budget. So we'll definitely talk a little bit about that. But we have some true OHIO flavor in the room today. All of us have a little bit of it in us. So give us not only your turf origin story, but any time that you cross paths with Weston and he embarrassed himself.
Oh, man. Well, okay. Well, first of all, I'm very honored to be here and sharing in the Bash Fest. This might be not. No, seriously. No, it is good to be here. And yeah, that podcast, way back then was kind of cool, because it helped solidify some ideas in my head that of different threads and pieces that were bouncing around at the time about budgets and how to approach them with people that don't do what we do every day.
Yeah.
So, but my origins go back to, I started working on a family golf course, family owned golf course, friends of our family, years ago, the summer I turned 13, and kind of went through the whole golf thing. I was there for 16 years, ended up as a superintendent at a private club, in Columbus, Ohio, and then decided that I wanted to go into sports turf and change direction and do something a little bit different within the industry. So I started working for a large municipality there, the city of Columbus, Ohio, so their recreational parks department, and had a pretty massive operation there in terms of the number of fields we took care of. So 94 ball diamonds, 60 soccer fields, cricket pitches, indoor facilities that we manage and everything like that. So a wide variety
of
things.
No big deal.
No, but it was a... I call it, you know, my graduate education, because it was not only the technical side of what we do. You know, we knew what we needed to do, but articulating that to people in a bureaucracy of 11,000 employees at the city, you know, in different forms and fashions, was absolutely critical to getting stuff done. So, you know, as I was working for the city, I started a little side hustle, and I called it Field Source. And it was just a couple of clients at the time back in 2018 when I started it. And it just kind of grew by word of mouth. We didn't do any advertising, didn't do any marketing, anything like that. Just our, you know, we were consulting on projects and helping similar type owners, right? Public agencies. Because what I saw in my time with the city of Columbus was that, you know, we were building all these awesome projects, you know, projects that were 7-8 figures. And then they were handed off to the grounds manager, or the folks that were in charge of it. And it was said, hey, here you go, take care of it. And well, how are we going to do that? We don't even know, you know, how this was designed, how it was built, what the intent was, how... You know, and, you know, a lot of times when it came to budgets, it was, well, you know, here, Ryan, here's a couple percent. You're a smart guy. You'll figure it out. You know, no big deal. So that kind of fueled me and fueled my fire to help out other, you know, similar sized agencies or similar situations, right, from the construction aspect. But we've grown to be now a Field Source. I went full time with it back in 2021. So we're almost 3 years into that now. And it's a company now that's got 8 full time employees.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had no idea that it had 8. I knew there was a couple
We went from
that you pulled along the way.
Yeah, we had 2 in April of last year, and we've just kind of exploded here.
Wow.
In the last year. So it's been a wild ride, but I think, you know, part of it too is you know, the traction that we do get is that, you know, we speak that language. There's 3 sides in any organization, right? I don't care if we're talking about a university, professional sports team like Weston, what you dealt with, right, in Columbus and Austin, a Parks and Rec agency, high school, whatever. You know, there are three groups that have to come together. The first is, you know, the administrative folks, the people that control the purse strings and ultimately have a say of, yes, we're going to spend that money, we're going to invest this capital, increase your budget, whatever the case might be, okay? There's that group. Then there are the programmers or events people, right? Weston, I really want to have that, you know, rock concert on the field, you know, 6 days before we have our next home match. What do you say? You know, or the athletic director that says, hey, I need to play, you know, two middle school games, a JV game, and a varsity football game all on that field this week. Can you get it ready for me? And, you know, it's the same cast of characters wherever you go. I'm telling you, like, if I go to a professional sports organization all the way down to a little league, it is the same cast of characters. It's just a different person in the seat. The last people are us, right? The people that have to take care of it and ultimately take what somebody says, I'm willing to spend X and I want to do Y, you need to make Z out of that and push that all together. So being able to speak those three languages, you know, and understanding the needs and wants of those people is really at the crux of what we do, whether it's construction, it's maintenance, or trying to, you know, sort of optimize operations in a place where people are saying, hey, we don't have the money or the time or the effort to do a construction project right now. We just know that we need to figure out what's going on here because nobody's aligned. We're going different directions and we're not getting value for what we spend each year.
So, Ryan, you're one of the smartest turf minds I've ever met. Like, we can talk for hours and hours about grass, soils, whatever. But you touched on a lot of communication topics there. Where did you learn that?
Again, at the city, because it's such, you know, it was such a diverse mix of people that had very different and discerning needs, right? Like, all the time, you know, finding somebody's why. There's a slide I put up in some of the presentations I do. Simon Sinek is a very famous author, right? Kind of new age business thinking guy. And he has this thing called the golden circle. And the golden circle is, you know, you've got the what on the outside of the circle and then a concentric ring inside of it that says, you know, how we're going to, you know, what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? You know, so for instance, I use the example, you know, if I go into my boss's office as a grounds manager and say, hey, I want a hollow tie in the field with 3/4 inch hollow tines. I want to pull cores, you know, sweep them up and then top dress 60 tons of sand. He's going to look at me and be like, or she's going to look at me and say, okay. I mean, or no, that sounds dumb. Why would you do that? When I get to the center of that golden circle, though, and I answer why, hey, listen, and this is important for us to do because we have a break in the schedule right now. It's an opportune time. This is accounted for in our budget and how we're going to proceed, or we're in a difficult situation where we need to do this to gain the recovery need because what's coming up, whether it be the football season, the baseball teams coming back into town, whatever, we need to make this move right now. And if I say that and I leave all the details of how and, you know, the how and what, that's how you get there. So I did a lot of getting to the why and trying to explain to different folks in their particular capacity. Here's the honest truth about communication. People are incredibly selfish. Incredibly selfish about what they'll offer, and they're incredibly selfish about what they're listened to. So you have to find their motivation of what they're willing to listen to at first, gain some rapport, gain some trust, because a lot of those people that were, I thought at first, difficult to deal with, and I, you know, would bang my head against the wall in those early days, became, you know, staunch allies because they knew what I said to them was what they needed to hear, right? And we were going to follow through and act on it accordingly. So I think that's the big thing is, you know, communication's important, but the follow through and that building rapport piece, and again, one thing I learned, and it was a very, very difficult lesson on the communication side, is to not get upset. You're going to get told no much more often than you're going to get told yes, you know, especially for what we do and the stakes that we're all dealing with. And so you have to tune yourself to no is not a no, right? Or the answer that you don't want to hear is not the worst thing in the world. I think, you know, the thing is, okay, how do we get to yes? And if that doesn't mean right now, or if that doesn't mean the scope that we're talking about or the approach we're talking about, let's continue the conversation. And it might be a right now thing, or it might be in a month, 6 months, whatever. But setting those expectations and moving forward, I can't stress enough how much I learned about that. And just to be honest, like, it was a lot of frustration, a lot of, you know, kind of learning myself of just how to approach different people and people that don't do what we do. I think that's probably the biggest thing I see now on the consulting side is where folks get frustrated. Here's two things I'll say on this is we get frustrated because we have a difficult time expressing what we need from other people that don't do what we do. So that's number one. So seeing and taking that perspective, and that's one of the things we talked about in our discussion, taking that perspective of the other person's views right? That's a huge piece. Mm-hmm. The other part too is resentment. We get very resentful about, oh, this, you know, that guy wouldn't let me do this, or this, you know, she just doesn't understand. You get resentful about what you don't talk about. You get, you know, upset about what you don't talk about. Yeah. And so trying to foster that dialogue and keeping things moving and knowing sometimes that you're beating a dead horse and yeah. sometimes that the right answer is that you're not in the right spot and maybe yeah. you need to go elsewhere. And that's okay. So,
well, and I think when we talked about it initially, what I really enjoyed what you said is, you know, not only speaking their language, but finding out what resonates with them.
Yeah.
Are they a visual person? Are they a numbers guy? You know, explaining the why, but also taking it a step further and figuring out how to phrase that why. And, you know, that sounds tedious, having to figure out how to paint the perfect picture for every single person you come across, but especially when you're talking about moving money or getting people on your side of, you know, of the charge, really figuring out what resonates with them.
Yeah. And I think you don't have to put too much effort in at first. I mean, well, I'll speak your language for a minute. Mm-hmm. I'll allow you to be selfish. It's a good thing. It's a good thing though, because it gets people on your level and talking. So the thing I would say there is, you know, I would do it like marketing where we test different messages.
Yep,
okay.
Yep.
So if for those of you that don't do marketing or aren't in that field, is, you know, we'll look at different messages and say, okay, here's A, here's B, right? Here's a graphic with a bunch of spreadsheets and numbers, and we're going to, you know, beat them over the head with
data. Are you paying attention to this?
I'm taking copious notes.
I think I heard Chris snoring.
Thanks for waking me up.
That's okay.
Stop. It's marketing. I figured you should hear this. So.
It's long overdue.
Well, I think what we said is that there needs to be like an 88 cell array formula, and that'll give you all the answers you need. It's in Excel.
Dude, I use 88 array all the time.
Okay. So the thing there is that, you know, you want to take that message and try to figure out what works. So maybe show them a little bit of data. Don't put too much time into it. Maybe mm-hmm. show them a little bit of the visuals, right? Pictures and things like that. And allow them to gravitate yep. one way or the other. And I'll just start with those two because, you know, the only other ways that I think are really helpful, sometimes people are, you know, good to bring out in the field and try to get their efforts put forth to like seeing the facility or taking, you know, taking space and taking perspective of you and what you're trying to do. So I think those are good ways of evaluating what works best. But once mm-hmm. you do, and sometimes you just need to ask, hey, I think that's another thing too, that, you know, you talked about communication is just ask them, hey, what would help you understand this better? Because I think yeah. the reason that you're saying no right now is maybe you don't understand, you know, how I'm trying to say it. And that's not a you problem. That's a me needing to work harder and, you know, be stronger in the way that I'm communicating this. What would help you? Perfectly honest to ask.
A lot of introspection to get to that point, though.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. It in courage, right? It takes courage to say, hey, my best might not be good enough. And I need to step up my game and do something different that maybe I'm not even capable of at this point.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. okay. It's okay to understand you have weaknesses.
Yeah, that's tough. Mm-hmm. totally fine. Totally fine.
Well, especially in like the culture where they say, you know, when you're interviewing for a job, turn every, you know, weakness into a strength, where it's like, we can't be this authentic person, where it's like, you know, my weakness is I came into that interview and asked 1,000 times with, you know, when I'd be able to take a maternity leave.
I thought she was kidding.
No, I mean, listen, you got to have goals. You got to have goals, and personal goals are just as important as
just
professional.
Just as important.
I agree with that.
And Ryan, you know, you mentioned a little bit earlier that you went from 2 to 8.
Yeah.
So that's a huge jump. It's exciting for the business. It gives you a ton of opportunity to take on more for sure. But when you were in that hiring process or, you know, wanting to bring people in on this, you know, this is your... You know, they yeah. say owning a business is your own little baby of sorts. It's like,
yeah.
it's your thing. So like, what were you looking for in employees? Like, what was the attribute or the value that you were like, they've got to have this if I'm going to bring them on the team?
So the absolute number one thing is that they have to be learners.
Okay.
We get paid to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And if what I mean by that from a consulting perspective is that it may be a project that we've executed that scope 1,000 times, but we need to get a little bit better, right? There's, if you're satisfied with the way we've always done it, you're not going to work here. And mm-hmm. if it's something that we've never done, we're not scared to say, you know, the very first project that we ever sold was growing a Bermuda grass field in Ohio. Now, Weston had done it the year or two before. And so I knew it was possible, but I walked in.
He says that like it's like something that like no one could possibly do, but Weston did it. So it's possible.
It's possible. Well, that, I knew it was possible. And so, but walking into a school district office and you've got, okay, I'll tell this story, right? So the very first one that we ever sold was this. Field at a very, very high profile high school fails, middle of the season. They have to move three other games. They'd won the state championship in the largest classification of football the year before, okay, in Ohio. And four games into the season, the field is done. There's maybe 30% cover. Move all their games. So they bring me in. I'm a nobody. Like, I had just formed this business months before. And they asked me, they've got the superintendent there, they've got treasurer, all this, all these big wigs. And they're like, well, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. I said, I don't know. You're going to tell me. And the treasurer throws his hands up and the superintendent's like, what are you doing here? And we walked through this whole process that I had in my head played out of how this was going to go based on all those experiences at the city and things like that. So we talked about what their most important sports were, right? Mm-hmm. What kind of downtime do we have? What kind of window do we have for the project? What were their, hopes and dreams? This is the funniest part about the whole thing was I asked them, how many events do you have on the field? In the, fall was the most important season. We got soccer and football on the same field, natural grass field. So it's kind of important to understand this. How many events do we have? Oh, we have about the same amount we've always had. Okay. Well, what's that mean? Well, it's about the same amount. I said, let's count them. All right. So we go on the calendar. We look 3 years prior, 38 events. Prior fall, 76 events. Double. It was double. It was exactly double.
It's about the same.
It felt like that, but it was just like they kept, inconsequently in their heads thinking, oh, we'll play the middle school game down there. Oh, we'll send, the JV soccer team down there to play, even though they have their own facilities and fields. And how much time do we probably go as sports field managers and not even think about that?
Yeah.
But when you quantify it, it's like, holy smokes, we just doubled the amount of traffic on this field. And so the question to the school was, I'm not going to tell you what you do. I'm going to ask you, do you want to build a field that can handle 40 games or do you want to build a field that can handle 80 games? That's for you to answer, not for me. I don't need to come in here and tell you what you need to build. That's not my job. My job is to figure out what the right answers are and then execute on that vision. So, yeah, I mean, that was one where the communication and humility, sometimes you just have to have a little bit of confidence that you can go in there and do it. But no, that's a situation where the putting together the vision, putting together the plan is the fun part, but the difficult part is communicating that and getting people to buy in. I think, doing that over and over and over. You need reps. To Chris's point, the courage piece is important, but you need reps.
So that's the first project. So year one, two fields maybe? To where? How many are you doing now?
So our project load is right around 20 to 28 projects in a year.
Wow.
And that's notwithstanding. So we've got really kind of two sides to our business now where, not only do we the construction projects and renovations, things like that. And that's at all levels, from minor league baseball all the way down to little league fields, things like that. Variety of sports, cricket even. I mean, we've got a cricket facility that's going in this year. So as we look at all this, right, it's now that side of it, which is where we started. We got our start, but now we're into kind of the maintenance and management side. I call it more management, right? Maintenance to me is a set of tasks that, we hope will achieve a good result, right? Mm-hmm. We check the box and everything should be fine. But really, from a sports field perspective and the type of use that we're putting these under, these fields under, and the people and the stakes that are involved, regardless of whether you're at a high school and the field doesn't look good on Friday night, somebody's going to hear about it, right, mm-hmm. in your community. Or, Weston, if you were at, Columbus or Austin and the field didn't look good, I'm sure that people were calling from upstairs and saying, hey, what's wrong with, the penalty box? Or, so regardless of where you're at, that criticism is...
Good news is I never got that call.
Good.
So it was
that was real or imagined. But those types of criticisms... are present, right? Or those perceptions. So on the management side now, we're helping mainly in the school and park realm, helping them sort of, again, bring those three groups together, the folks that program the fields, the folks that are administrators that, ultimately control the money and the politics, school boards, communities, mm-hmm. things like that. And then finally, the maintenance folks is to try and get those aligned. I can tell you without question, 100% of the time, if there is not alignment, even if it's only two of the three, it fails every single time. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the crux of, being able to sit in a room individually or as a group and talk to those folks and get on the same page and move in the same direction. And, you know, there's change, there's things that go on, you know, where people move on and do different things, right? So you've got to kind of live with those organizations, and as they grow and move and shape different ways, you know, we've got to be able to adapt to that too.
Definitely. And I'm sure that's a part of the session, you know, ball fields on a budget. Like, yeah, you, that's part of the recipe. You got to have that alignment. But what are some of the other golden nuggets that, you know, people can start to look further into, resources that they can, you know, start to rely on if they're up against a budget? And I mean, literally every single person is.
Oh, yeah. I'll probably ask that question tomorrow when I do this, is, you know, how many people have excess money in their budget that you're just looking for something to spend it on, right? It doesn't exist. So, you know, there's some tangible things. And in the talk, we kind of go from the ground level up to 30,000 feet. The one slide that's really interesting that I show is, you go to a lot of these talks and they're very centered around, you know, products and practices.
Yep.
And I think those are important. Don't get me wrong. Like, but who's using those products, and who is performing these practices, right? It's people. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So the slide that I'd like to show is in a municipal environment, you know, whether it be K-12 or Parks and Rec or something like that, you've got roughly somewhere between 59% and 68% of your budget is wrapped up in labor.
Wow.
So that's one of the components at the end that we talk more about, the labor side, because there is so much money that's wrapped up in that,
yeah,
right? And understanding it, you know, again, whether it's a ground level of how to approach day-to-day scheduling, mm-hmm, having priorities that are, you know, weekly, monthly, quarterly, whatever, to get to where you want to go, and communicating those is important. So, you know, some nuggets that are interesting right now, I think that we can talk more ground level and tangible stuff is, you know, so one thing we'll talk about there is fertilizer prices, for example, or really any product right now that's a soft good that's in your distributor's hands is interesting, because there are a lot of products that were bought, you know, during the run up of fertilizer prices, for example, or petroleum prices here over the last several months. Those have been sitting in warehouses, maybe some for a while, some maybe not so much, that moved more quickly. So you might go get a price on the same product this spring, have the same, you know, type of fertilizer, bag of fertilizer, whatever, and the price from one distributor might be, you know, 20-30% higher, and you're going to be like, well, this guy's trying to screw me over. No, it's just the way that their costing has worked out to when they've purchased that and brought that into their inventory versus somebody else that may have moved it. So the message there is that, you know, be a little more flexible in your products this season, you know, whether it be chemicals or fertilizers. Talk to your suppliers. And that's what we talk about, is how to be a good customer, a good client, mm-hmm, to your sales reps, right? Because ultimately, you know, the ones that you just bark at and say, oh, you got to do better on price, yeah, you sharpen your pencil, all that stuff. Like, it's not about that, right? It's about having a plan and saying, hey, I can be a little flexible. And do you have something that's similar that's at a better price point that fits my budget better? That, yeah, is a better conversation than, you know, barking at them and leaving them a nasty voicemail or something like that. So that's one piece that we've seen a lot coming into this year. That's going to be a really important thing. But beyond that, you know, we're seeing a lot of movement towards, you know, the technology piece and trying to replace some of that labor. Mm-hmm. I'm talking a little bit about that. And I think with technology, what we've seen in terms of adoption and implementation has been, you still have to be committed to it. You're still going to have staff and time and effort and setbacks. I mean, mm-hmm, it's, I know
inevitable.
some people around this booth might not want to hear that there's going to be setbacks, but there are, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a reality. The situation is that the time offset that exists there, you know, is not 100%. You're not going to get 100% of that time back. Mm-hmm. But finding the areas within your operation that make the most sense, right, that are, you know, sucking time away from priorities, is a huge thing. And that's that last piece. So we talked a little bit about this, I think, in our first podcast, was that priority setting objective, right? Mm-hmm. So from our staff perspective, right, we're entrusted to do the best that we can, everything like that. But the perception is whatever we put out there, right? So our intention to put a specific type of product out there, a specific look, I no longer call them aesthetics. I call them impressions, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's how you're going to leave somebody feeling after they look at that, man, like, oh, that looks good. Or, mm-hmm, holy smokes, that field needs some work. You know, that's my son goes with me to work sometimes, and that's what he'll always say. You know, Dad, this field needs some work. Thanks, kid.
Do you think we have an Apple baby in our future?
What's that?
Like an Apple baby? Like he'll stay in the industry?
Oh no, I don't think so. No. I don't. I think he'll just come to work every 3 months and give Dad a bunch of grief. That's his role. I tell him you're in quality control.
I mean, the way your business is growing, he may never have to work.
Right? I don't think so. I don't want to get that.
That's
big.
Good for him, right?
I don't want to get. I've always said if we have to hire just like dudes off the street, like we're done. Yeah. That's what they're tapping out. So I'm never going to be the Bezos of the turf industry. I'll just say that.
You're definitely one of our favorites. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
And we really appreciate your time here today.
Yeah.
And if anybody wants more of those golden nuggets, like this is self-promotion.
Oh, wow.
When does the book come out?
You have a book?
It sure sounds like he's working on a book.
I know. Seriously. And let us come on tour with you.
Yeah. With every Barnes & Noble that's still open. Oh, no. Walden Books at the Mall. We'll go to Walden Books at the Mall.
They just opened a new Barnes & Nobles where I live.
I love that.
It's wild.
Because you guys are 35 years behind the
time. We are.
But no, if people want to hear more about that justifying the bottom line, I think when I gave our podcast to our editor, it was probably the longest one he had seen yet. And he was like, what? And it was because there were limitless topics that you and I could get into. So if people want to go and find that, that's going to be on our Groundskeeper chat page, Pioneer Athletics. But before we let you go, we want to ask you, this is the weather report in honor of our Weston Apfelfeller over there.
Okay.
It just rolls off the tongue, you know?
Weston on the fives.
And it is because when we film this, via Zoom, we have him outside. And as you know, he's in Vermont now, so it's never warm. A cut and dry situation for him. But the weather report is what you are most excited about in the forecast of our industry.
Oh, wow.
What is out there? Even if it's just something you've seen this week or something on the personal business side, what has you excited about the future?
Man, this is tough. I came on here pre-show and I said I would talk about anything, but this is one thing I'm not prepared. So let me think about this here. So
let's move on to politics then.
we'll go right down the list.
Is there a new turf dating app? Sure, like that's the only thing that's not out there.
SwipeRightTurf.com, maybe. Let's go. So a few things. I think the from a product side, let's look at this from a couple different lenses. Product side. Again, the technology piece, I think it's awesome that we have all this stuff. And I think that what we've got to push as end users is how do I put this into practice? How do I implement this? Mm-hmm. And how is this going to give me data, time, effort, whatever, to take action and make decisions and keep moving forward in a more efficient basis? So what I'm saying there is that I'm hopeful that the technology is going to help us do our jobs better. It already is. I mean, whether you like it or not, it already is. I think the thing that we have to do is work together with them and not just sit there and berate and say, oh, it doesn't work or this, that. Hey, let's work together and make it work better for what we use it for.
Yeah.
So that's one aspect. From the people side, seeing the range of experience that's here from younger folks all the way up to, some of the most seasoned industry veterans, I can tell you that we can sit here and complain all day long about, kids don't want to work this and that. I'll say this very pointedly, shut up and help.
Yeah.
You're not doing anybody any service by complaining about it. Find somebody, mentor them, help them, show them the way. Maybe they'll never be, the groundskeeper of the year in the MLS or something like that. That's not the point though. There are, and this is the part that hits me near and dear is that, in this particular association here, and at this show, 70%+ of the people work in K-12 schools and Parks and Rec. That's my home. That's where I came up from, right? And there are literally tens of thousands of fields. There's 21,500 park and school districts in this country, right? Think about all the fields that your kids play on.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that I'm most interested in. I'm not saying I don't care about professional fields and I don't care about collegiate fields, but
it's the lifeblood.
The community aspect of seeing a bunch of kids playing Little League baseball or a bunch of high schoolers that are going out there on senior night and kicking butt. Like,
love it.
That's the stuff that gets me fired up. So take time to show people that, hey, there are different opportunities here. It's not always about the top of the top, but there are so many different ways to get involved in this industry. Make your mark as broad or widely as you want to make it.
Great message.
Wow. So that's a stamp on a podcast. Well, done. Where's
press? Yeah, maybe the dump horn. Or something, you know.
Well, thank you again, Ryan. We appreciate you hopping on. Yep, and have a great rest of your show.
Yep. Thank you, guys.
Take care.